pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Joining me as they do, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, starting off with the man over at MGO Blog, Brian Cook, BC. Good morning.
Good morning.
The man next to the man over at, or at least one of the men next to the man over at MGO Blog, Seth Fisher. How are you, Seth?
Having a good post-Charles Woodson day after my most popular tweet ever.
All right. And then Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Speaking of whiskey, Ed Fang owes me a good bottle of whiskey that he keeps welching on. I don't remember what the bet was. He admits that he lost it, but he won't. I haven't seen him. He runs by my house every now and then, and I scream at him, "Where's my whiskey?" And he just waves at me.
All right, guys. Look, hey, I admit waking up in a very just excited mood. You know, 4:30 in the morning, and I'm excited because Michigan's playing. I find myself feeling that way about seemingly every game here the last couple of times Michigan has played, taking on Iowa, coming off what was, to me, Brian, the best win by any team of the college basketball season. Is that hyperbole, Michigan going to Ohio State and beating them like they did?
Well, I mean, given how well Ohio State played, I think you can make that case. Like, that was a team where – they shot 50% from three. Everybody's talking about Michigan's ability to hit threes in the first half, but you know, Ohio State was 11 of 22 and Michigan was 11 of 23. So when you are able to keep up and you feel like you have a shot quality advantage, which I feel like Michigan did, they didn't take any runners. They didn't take any off the dribble threes like Dwayne Washington canned. Like, I feel like the nature of that victory was very impressive because they were getting wide open threes the entire second half. They got 1 of 10, and they still outscore the number four team in the country in that half. So that's a team that can get it done either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a
great observation.
Yeah.
After the game, Holtman made it sound like they tightened things up defensively in the second half from three. No, you didn't.
No.
You didn't?
No.
They tightened the rim, maybe.
Yeah, man.
Maybe they replaced the rims because I think they who was it? They said like they love the rims. They love.
Sean D did.
Sean D said that. And maybe they replaced the rims afterwards. They got word that Michigan was having too much fun with those nets and changed those.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Ohio State did much. In fact, I thought our looks in the second half were every bit as good as the looks in the first half. You know, what was most interesting to me is the juxtaposition of the Rutgers game and the Ohio State game, because Rutgers couldn't be more different. They're the exact opposite of Ohio State in almost every single way. I mean, Rutgers loves to run ball screens and more ball screens and more ball screens, and Michigan was completely prepared for it. And Rutgers is a good team. They just beat up on Indiana last night, and they're good. They're a top 30 team. And In the Michigan game, Michigan ran drops, they ran hedges, you know, they just kept, I felt, Rutgers completely off balance with how they defended the ball screens. Plus, Rutgers can't really shoot the ball all that well. They're not a very good shooting team. And so Michigan won the game, but it's an entirely different thing from playing that with Rutgers big center, Miles Johnson, and then you go to Ohio State, who plays without a post. I mean, they essentially play five out most of the time. And so it took a completely different sort of defensive effort. And I felt like Michigan contested Ohio State most of the game on threes. Either that or Ohio State moved 6 feet beyond the line. And you have to give them credit for sure. I mean, they shot it. I mean, Ohio State shot it, and they shot it really well. And Liddell is one hell of a player, and Washington is a good player. And so it was, Michigan just played an both teams played amazing games. I won't say as much about the officiating crew, but both
six
teams
minutes and 35 6 minutes and 35 seconds, everybody.
Yeah. But that's how long it took me to whine about it. But, but in any event, I have a hunch a few people might agree with me on that one. And
I do.
Yeah. And but beyond that, I felt the change that Michigan had to make in defense from going to Rutgers to Ohio State was, you know, was pronounced, and they did it reasonably well. I mean, I don't think Michigan played a bad defensive game against Ohio State at all. I felt that Ohio State just played a really good game and shot the ball exceedingly well. And I don't know what you guys saw, but that's what I saw.
Well, I mean, they did shoot uncommonly well, just given the shots that they got, with a couple of exceptions. And one of them was Dwayne Washington going 7 of 8 from two. And he roasted Shondy once. He roasted Eli a few times. He got a tough bucket against Wagner. But like seeing Eli give up mostly straight line drives to the basket for layup is not something we had seen this year, and that was I think their best offense aside from an occasional open look from three they got. But you know, if you look at the assists in this game, I think they had something like 8. Michigan had something like 19, and that's kind of how the game felt.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like Ohio State, one of the ways they kill you is they'll break you down and then kick it out to Justin Ahrens, and that guy is just uncanny from three. And Michigan shut that guy off completely. I think he only had two attempts, and one of them was one of those readjustments that goes into an air ball. And I mean, Mike Smith was on that guy, but I think Michigan just said, we're going to man up these guys, which I don't know if I liked all the matchups for that, but you know, that was smart, and I think that, you know, that left Eli on Washington, and Washington had to play a great game against Eli for them to score any points.
And look, we talked about Dwayne a little bit last week. There is zero doubt that when he sees Michigan across the – I don't know if he feels slighted, if he feels like they didn't recruit him hard enough or what. He sees Michigan across the aisle, and it's not just Michigan-Ohio State, which is big enough, but that is Michigan too, and he takes his game up a notch. He scored a career high last year against Michigan. He scored a career high this year against Michigan. And he is a guy who I feel like he's back next year, which signs a point to. I think he's a guy that's all Big Ten caliber, first team all Big Ten caliber. I think that his shooting or his rim attacking has caught up with his shooting. And I think that he is on the verge of really breaking out. And I think we saw glimpses of that. The clear push off, Craig Ross. that notwithstanding, he was really, really tough to deal with.
He's a great player. I mean, I think, in my opinion, he's a very fine player. As is Liddell. Those are two really tough guys to play against. And they're an excellent team. That's all you can say about it. It's just that Michigan came out and shot it really well and played good offense. And Ohio State's not a great defensive team. I mean, they're at best a pedestrian defensive team, but Michigan took advantage of that and took advantage in the second half of their size inside. And, you know, that was it. But it really was a great game, and it deserved the accolades that it got. It's one of the best games I've seen in a while. That's for sure.
Well, we cannot though, not mention Hunter Dickinson played a hell of a game, man. In that contest, that he statistically with what he did, but as Ira and I were talking about all earlier in the week, he did things that don't show up in the stats. I mean, he, you know, if there was such a thing as a hockey assist in basketball, the guy would have had, you know, maybe 4 or 5 more assists. But think about the times he walled off help defenders to allow layups. Think about the, you know, the passes out, the kickouts that he made that led to other passes. That led to baskets, and his effectiveness, and we'll contrast this a little bit later on in the show, guys. The effectiveness Hunter Dickinson passing out of double teams
Kofi.
Compared to the effectiveness of Kobe Coburn passing out of quadruple teams. He didn't do it. He never passed, not one time. Hunter, it was a clinic, I thought, the day he had against Ohio State.
Yeah, he's able to, especially against guys who are Ohio State size, so they don't have the Liam Robbins and then the 6'9" guys that Minnesota had when they were successfully trapping Hunter, they're sending a 6'7" guy and maybe a 6'8" guy if they put Kyle Young on you. And Hunter's able to just see over that, and then the skip passes that ensue from that are not just accurate, they are flat. So they get there fast. And then it's right in the shooting pocket, and you're able to go up with it. And it didn't feel like this was a game where you look at Michigan going 11 of 23 from three and think, oh, Michigan got lucky.
Right.
No, they deserve that rate because Hunter Dickinson had the gravity and the ability to pass out of double teams.
That is a great take, Brian. They were talking about Michigan going 10 for 13 in the first half. Like, oh, this is just blind luck. I mean, compare it to like when Michigan played Maryland early in the season and Maryland went off in the first half of that game from three. And you're like, man, these are tough threes that they're knocking down, right? There's no way they can sustain that. Michigan was not knocking down open threes. I'm sorry, guy. I'm just saying. But that's the kind of comparison that came in my mind. The threes that Maryland hit against Michigan in the first half of that game, they were contested, hands in the face. I mean, guys in their shorts, and they were still hitting them. This game, I mean, Michigan, through terrific passing and give Ohio State, their plan was clear. They were going to blitz Hunter. They were going to try to jump Franz on, you know, coming off of ball screens. Michigan made them pay.
Yeah, in the first half, I think Michigan might have been 10 of 13. Is that right? From three.
That's right.
And I went back and checked. 9 of them were unchecked. So 9 of those 13 shots, there was no one within a few feet of the shooter. So it's not a surprise that you shoot at that rate, especially the corner threes, when you're getting those quality of looks. And a lot of the reasons for the quality of looks was the double teaming down on Hunter. And the big thing for Hunter, well, to me, in the second half was he was 6 of 6 from the line.
Yeah.
And this in a half when you had Livers, who's a great free throw shooter, a blank two, and you had Franz, who's an 86% free throw shooter, Biff the first of a 1-1. So it really was important. And he, you know, here's your 7'1" guy come in and make 6 of 6 from the line. That was a big deal. And so you can't, it's hard to overstate how good of a game he really had here.
Yes, yeah, so I want to indulge in the mm-hmm. discussion that Chris brought up a little bit earlier, because it was a debate that my guy Tim McCormick and I had on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I know Tim is the right time. And then out.
With Sam's connection here, but what Sam is talking about as we work on getting Sam connected, he and Tim was defending the refs, Craig.
Well, really? Tim is wrong. Tim is wrong. I mean, the refs weren't that bad. I'll give you that. But sometime you have to know the difference between a block and a charge, and these guys didn't seem to know the difference, and they weren't close. The one against Mike Smith was right. That one was absolutely right.
Yeah, that one was right.
Every other call was probably wrong.
I thought the Livers one where he's in transition against Young, I wasn't surprised to see that call to charge. Like, if you interpret Young as an on-ball defender, and I think that there's a case for that, but like the Franz one, which is he's already passed the ball and there's a guy moving out under
jumps
him.
Jumps underneath him.
Yeah, that one was ridiculous. What about the charge on Hunter?
Oh yeah, he gets his elbow out a little bit. It was a little bump. I mean, it wasn't a charge, right? It was like it was a player control foul.
It was not an offensive foul, but they called it offensive foul, which is ridiculous.
But Hunter's like pointing at the circle afterwards, and one, the circle doesn't apply to an on-ball
defender. Not relevant. You're right.
And two, they didn't call him for a charge. So
my only problem with that is that's the first time that's been called in the Big Ten all year.
All decade.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so all of a sudden that's a foul when they let every other center in the Big Ten butt the guy out of the way. And they had let Kyle Young do it earlier in the game. It was the same play. All of a sudden, I mean, that's the maddening thing.
We'll wrap up because we won't go too far down the referee here. But
okay, I'm out of it.
I'll give you one last comment on this because you have attended a lot of sports, and this is my contention. I don't think the Big Ten cares about officials because Big Ten officials in football are bad. Big Ten officials in men's basketball are bad. Big Ten officials in women's basketball are bad. They're bad in softball. They're bad in baseball. They may be the most atrocious in hockey if you want to include the CCHA days. I don't think they seem to care about having poor quality of officials, because otherwise I think we would hear more about them trying to make it better. That's the way I see it.
This character is going down the rabbit hole, I think.
I said the last question.
A couple things. First of all, if you want to call elbows, great. I want that thing called every single time against Luka Garza tonight. Number two, Carstensen is the one that everyone was mad about. DJ Carstensen, if I had to pick one referee for a Big Ten game that I want to watch, he's the guy. And he's been doing like so many games this year. We've been watching all every Big Ten game this year because it's a segment on our pod this year, and like that's the guy I'm always excited to see because it's not going to be a ref show. You know, he's not just going to call everything. It was a biased officiating game, but I don't think it was a ref show.
I agree with that.
No, it wasn't a ref show.
Yeah, I agree with that. And in most respects, it wasn't terrible. It there were just five or six calls and they were all similar that were hard to understand. You know, I think the Big Ten officiating has gotten better. I've said that. A lot better than what it used to be.
It definitely has.
Yeah. My point is you're not going to fix Big Ten officiating by getting rid of Carstensen. Like, if you want to go and, like, look at the problem for that game, is not a problem.
No, Carson's just not the problem.
I try to have this conversation removed from Michigan games. Watching Michigan State play the other night, and the guy from Michigan, Sissoko, smacks a guy in the head. They're like, oh, that's not a foul. Like, it's just, or not intentional, when he elbows him in the head. Like, especially against the most egregious stuff is when they go to monitors and they still seem to get things egregiously wrong, even using a monitor. But as I said, we won't go any further down the hole. Let's get back to the action on the floor as we're continuing with the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. Sam is in the process of rebooting his computer. If you were watching, you saw him freeze. If you were listening, you probably heard him sound all funky before he froze up and he was gone. But guys, a lot of questions coming in about strategy for tonight. So let's get into strategy for the game tonight. And so a question of, what do you do? Because we heard Phil Martelli was asked yesterday about defending Garza. He's like, that's a trick question. We didn't guard Garza. So what do you do? Like, what is your strategy? I'll start with you, Brian. What do you do strategy defensively to try to limit because of Garza, the Garzettes hitting threes and Garza, doing what he does?
Yeah. If you get a situation where one of their starters is off the floor and they have a backup guard on, then you double hard on Garza because none of their backup guards are shooters. So you can double hard off Joe Toussaint. If they have Frederick and Bohannon and Wieskamp all on the floor together, those guys are like shooting collectively 46-47% from three. I'm just eating Garza post-ups and seeing what happens. And, maybe that turns out to be an untenable move and then you start doubling. But, he would have to hit something like 75% of his twos to keep up with Iowa three-point shooting. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, you saw the problem in Ohio State. I mean, with our centers having to chase Liddell around some on the perimeter, it allowed – Eli had no help. And so he got beat to the basket several times. But that's just something you sort of have to live with because you have to pick your poisons against a good offensive team. And certainly Iowa – as I think, still considered the number one offensive team in the country by KenPom. And, and so if they're playing well, they're just going to score points. It's something you have to live with. They're not a good defensive team, and so you have to beat them that way. I don't think you can double down on Garza. I agree with Brian when Frederick and Wieskamp are on the court in particular, because those guys are 50% shooters from three. And the truth is, even the McCaffrey has been shooting it lately. He started the season terrible, and he's shooting it in the last few games. The one guy who doesn't shoot it, you're right, and Keegan Murray's up to almost 40% from three, a freshman. And the only guy in this team who doesn't really shoot it is Toussaint. He's a terrible shooter. And so maybe you can cheat off him. My feeling is you do have to give some help on Garza, but it has to be late. If he establishes position early, and you're better off just letting him, letting him go. But if you can get him holding the ball a second or two, and where he starts to make his look to the basket, now you can help him. Because he's an okay passer, but he's not a great passer, particularly once he sort of starts to make his move to the basket. So I don't know how you do that, but I think you can help on him late, but if that makes any sense, but not early. I don't know. I mean, to some extent, Iowa makes threes. You're going to have, this is what, you know, Izzo, we were talking about last week. Izzo was, you know, they decided we're going to shut down Garza, and they did. He had 8 points. And they gave up whatever it was, 88, and lost by 30. So it doesn't make sense just to obsess on Garza and give up open looks, because they're going to score a kabillion points. So I think Brian is essentially right. I think sometimes it may make sense to double down on Garza. But by and large, you just sort of have to live with him. And the big issue for Michigan will be not getting in foul trouble, because I don't think Austin Davis has as much hope of really checking him in the low post. That's for sure. I'm not sure Hunter does, but
yeah, I think it was interesting that Michigan used Hunter Dickinson against EJ Liddell against Ohio State, because like my thought when they were going into the game was you're going to put him on Kyle Young, and then you can use like Livers on Liddell, right? Because Liddell's going to be shooting from outside too.
Yeah.
But no, they let him do it, and you know sometimes he didn't get out there, and Liddell got a shot off from three, which is what Garza can do too, right? He's 44% from three this year, on a fair number of them. So I think that's Michigan's plan. I think that was, you know, let's see what Hunter can do. You know, he can move his feet a little bit, and hope you can live that way, because you can't let the other guys just kill you. Like, if you can just have Garza go to work, and he's going to get his. But remember, their defense is not great either. So Garza can be, you know, pretty effective, and you can go down and score the same amount and more on the other side, which comes back to Austin Davis. I think, you know, he's not going to be able to check him, no, but Davis could also score on him and maybe get a couple fouls on him and get him off the court.
You know, what worries me about Iowa the most is that the last five games they've played pretty decent defense. I mean, not great defense, but they are on a run where their defense has been respectable. And earlier in the season, they were sitting at about 120, as high as 120.
142 is what I saw.
142. Okay. That could be. And now they're down to 75. So that is 75 isn't great, especially against a good offensive team like Michigan. But there, it looks like McCaffrey, Coach McCaffrey, has worked some on trying to make them at least a vaguely plausible defensive team. And at least in the last five games, it's worked. You know, now you do have an Izzo offense in there, and who knows what he was doing at that moment. It seems like Michigan State has finally made some logical changes in their structure, and I think they're not going to be easy the rest of the way because of that. But back at that time, they were in complete crazy land in terms of what Izzo was doing.
Well, yeah, and Iowa's this five-game stretch was Rutgers, State, Wisconsin, which, you know, is kind of broken right now, and Penn State. So none of those are, like, great offenses. I think Michigan's a much more difficult challenge for them offensively than any of those teams they played. Remember, they gave up 89 to Ohio State and not that many possessions. So it was a I think Michigan can score on these guys.
All right, guys, we're going to hopefully get Sam back. The internet completely crashed at his house in the middle of that opening segment, but we have a lot more with the MGoBlog Roundtable. We'll continue with the fellas on the other side of the break as we continue here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. Yeah, we're clear on the radio. Sam texted the whole house. Internet just crashed down.
Oh, wow.
We saw him kind of just freeze in position, and I knew something was wrong, needless to say. Seth, we'll talk about the bacon event when we come back here, too.
Okay, cool.
Bump that one up.
I'm a little worried about this one.
Game tonight?
Yeah. Sam from China, now in Texas.
Yeah, Ron was in China. He was in Korea at one point. And Ron, if you're listening, I still have the thing you sent me from China hanging in my office. That's been here for almost a full 10 years now, I think.
Yeah.
This is a question. We'll get into this, I think, on the other side, too. Because this is obviously with these games that are left. An interesting question about...
Yeah, here's a question. Whether Illinois is tougher than Iowa for us. I think Illinois has more flaws because, I mean, you can double Coburn. I mean, that guy, he's got, I think, three assists on
all year, the entire season. Yeah.
His assist rate is 1.0, which is not high.
Yeah, what would be a good assist rate?
Like 25.
What about a decent for a big?
We're talking like 10. Hunter's at 7, and that's not fair, but you know.
Yeah, but yeah.
Another question that we can get into a little bit. They can guard AO. They've got a lot of guys who, you know, I don't think
length.
Him against Franz, like, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I that's what Michigan State showed in that game, is put length on Illinois, and you can make them a little more uncomfortable. But I think, Craig, I think you might be right. Like, that maybe at their best, they're as good as anyone, but they might be a little more flawed because you can attack them in certain ways or make them. You can,
yeah,
you weaken them by forcing Coburn to try to pass the ball, which he doesn't do, or
and
left, which he doesn't do.
Yeah, and making Io go left, and in which they last night, who did they play? Did they lose last night or the night before?
No, they came back to win. They were down. Okay. They lost to Michigan State two nights ago. It was a different game. I was thinking about
right, and Michigan State did a good job. They forced him left, and he'll go left one dribble and give up. That's it.
And again, last was Rutgers, Indiana. That was a barn burner early, that Rutgers came back from a 15-point deficit.
Yeah. You know, I think Archie Miller is, I mean, my fear is that Beilein will take that job. And
oh, God, no. Don't even speak it into existence.
I mean, if he wants to come back and coach, I mean, is there any way Archie Miller endures this year? I mean, I somehow don't think so.
It's possible they give him a COVID pass, but
it depends. I mean, he's got a couple more opportunities to pick up these random wins they have. But yeah, he's in a very.
I mean, that team is terrible. Spot.
Maybe they cut his salary and he replaces his entire system with 30-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but my real fear, quote fear. I mean, you want John Beilein to do what he wants to do, and I don't know what he wants to do.
No, I don't want John Beilein at Indiana.
I don't want him in the Big Ten.
That
would be a really good landing spot for him in the Big Ten, and I don't want him at any of those places. Here's a question from Ralph. Can Michigan, do you think they can go undefeated the rest of the way? I don't know if you mean regular season or through the entire run, but I would stick with just the regular season part.
Sure. I mean, I think there's like a 19% chance on KenPom, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right.
Beilein has not ruled out coaching again, but
yeah. I mean,
we'll see.
How about Pioneer High School? No, I'm serious. I mean,
See, Jason, you're onto what I've mentioned this to some friends back home too, because he would kill it down there too, and he's got ties to the region. But again, I don't want Beilein in the Big Ten. I got better places for Beilein to go that would be great for us and for Beilein.
Yeah,
and none of them involve being in the Big Ten. We are back on radio in about 30 seconds, guys.
Yeah, so I don't. Who knows what? I mean, we don't really know what he wants to do. But my instinct is he probably wants to come back and coach. And Indiana sure looks like a natural for him. I mean, I don't know. Assuming his family wants to leave Ann Arbor, I don't know what. There's life.
There are a lot of other things that come into play.
Yeah.
All right, guys, stand by. Coming back on radio in about 10 seconds. And welcome back to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The Ticket, online at WTK.com. Back here with the MGO Blog Roundtable. Brian Cook, Craig Ross, Seth Fisher. We're efforting the return of Sam Webb, but the internet completely crashed at his house. So it's not looking good at the moment. But our fingers are crossed. We'll see if we can get him back in for the last part.
I think he's just
the show. But in the meantime, we'll continue with this conversation here on the air. And Seth, before we go forward and get back into basketball and other things, maize and blue, let's remind everybody about what's coming up. What is it? The week from Saturday. Man, it's going to be great. A week from Saturday.
Yeah, roasting March 6th, we are roasting bacon. And that's really why Sam has disappeared right now, because Bacon blames him for letting me come on the show and issue the challenge without Bacon actually knowing what was coming. But we're trying to save the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase, which is a very important venue for me. I basically every single one of my dates in college went to the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. Well, I mean, I love that place. It's one of my favorite things to do after we tape the Bose Store show during football weekends. Is I'll see who's there and go over there afterwards and then get a beer. And this has been, you know, how many people have come through Ann Arbor at the showcase, and I mean the response to this has been incredible. Like Jeff Ross jumped on, he's like, "Yeah, I want to do this." Like that place is awesome. So the date is March 6th. And it's going to be it's $10 to sign, actually, sorry, $15 to sign up. We sold out of our $10 tickets really quickly. And the lineup is a little bit in flux, but we got Holly Anderson joining us. Bruce Motti's going to do it. You know, Sam and Ira, of course. Zach Martina from the comedy club himself. So it's and the Sklar brothers are hosting. So it's going to be a good show. I've got a couple good jokes. Fortunately, people keep on ruining them on the radio for me. But
what did I didn't do it? What did I do?
Was it you or is who else? No, I think the Sklars actually took one of my jokes.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah,
and people can get the. I'm pretty sure I still have it pinned on top of my Twitter page, but I know you've tweeted it out.
Yeah,
where can people go to get tickets?
Just go to our website real quick, and it'll be right on the top. Or I will tweet it out right now underneath your underneath the MGO blog roundtable.
And we will make sure to keep tweeting that out as we keep reminding people coming up on March 6th. Save the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. And if you listen to this show, you've heard a lot of people on this show that have performed there. Alan Trues performed there. Obviously, the Sklar Brothers, a couple that just come to the top of my mind. But a lot of, even our guests have performed over the years at the Comedy Showcase. But a lot of follow-up questions have been coming in. A lot of follow-ups basically been coming in, trying to find out how many second dates did you get after taking dates to the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase the first time when you were taking dates in college?
You don't have to answer that.
Pretty good. No, I had a pretty good rate at second dates. I usually didn't make it past 4 or 5.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase, the event's coming up. We'll talk, of course, again about it tomorrow morning when John Ubacon joins us here in the same time window. So looking forward to that as well. Big basketball day today. The women's team plays at 4:30. The men's team then plays at 7 in the Michigan-Iowa doubleheader. Guys, the Big Ten got one right. They actually scheduled a doubleheader we can actually watch properly. I don't know if you've seen the wins. If the Michigan women make the Big Ten championship game, they'll play at the exact same time as the semifinals would happen in the Big Ten men's because they decided to totally screw that one up. But that's for a conversation in a couple weeks from now. Guys, we are obviously not just the Iowa matchup, but the Indiana game as well. Indiana, to me, kind of an enigma. I know we don't generally go too far ahead, but the game is coming up at noon on Saturday. Indiana's kind of an enigma. We talk a little bit about Archie Miller in the break. But what are your guys' thoughts? Start with you, Craig. Your thoughts on the matchup coming up on Saturday. Indiana's got a great player. But they
do have one great player, and I watched a good chunk of them last night against Rutgers and just kept shaking my head because I don't feel that Indiana, they just don't seem very well organized or structured. I think they're an underachieving team. It's not that they're super talented, but they're more talented than what they're playing because really Rutgers just kind of beat up on them. And they didn't have anything, any punchback. They didn't seem to have any answer. So I haven't watched Indiana as much as I've watched Illinois or Iowa or some of the other, or Michigan State. But they're disappointing to me. I mean, if Tennessee gets going outside, okay. They have this very talented guy, what's his name, Jackson Davis, inside, a 6'9", 6'10 guy. Sometimes he just evaporates from the games. It's like his teammates don't even know who he is or how he showed up on the court. I don't know what to make of him. I mean, Michigan, the one downside for Michigan is they don't have any prep time. People have talked a lot about how Michigan will get tired. No, they're not going to get tired. But the question is whether you can actually prepare for teams, and when you really only have one day in between games. But Michigan is a much better team than Indiana, as is most of the rest of the league, really.
So Indiana's problem is that they really only have two shooters. So Durham can shoot and Franklin can shoot, but Race Thompson is out there half the time with Trace Jackson Davis, and Finney is just miserable pretty much in all facets of shooting. So, Jackson Davis is a really good player, but they are susceptible to doubles basically no matter who they put on the floor. There's like no combination of Indiana players where you can't float off one or two of them. And so he's able to get a number of shots up. He's really good given the context. But, once you force the ball out of Trace Jackson Davis's hands, nobody else is going to pick up that slack. So this is kind of the opposite of what I was talking about for Iowa, where maybe you just have to live with what Garza is doing. No, you double Trace Jackson Davis every time he touches the ball, and you live with whatever happens. And he's probably going to dump off some assists to Ray Thompson. But, you know, if he's hitting guys for three and you've got guys up on Franklin and Durham, you're going to be in a good spot.
I kind of consider Indiana a masterclass in how not to put together your team, because like what are they good at, right? There's a couple guys who are like, Race Thompson's a good defender, Trace Jackson Davis and Elijah Durham, they're good defenders. And then they watch somebody just take Rob Phinisee off the ball, or Jerome Hunter gets out there and he just gets blown by, or doesn't rotate on a shift. Like, so you always have these holes in your defense, and eventually the guys who are good at it are going to be like, well, why am I trying so hard, right? Like, what if everyone else is going to, if that guy's going to keep screwing that up? And then offense is the same way. Right, you got a couple of good offensive players, and you got a couple of guys who like just can't shoot. So it's eventually like, if you're Trace Jackson Davis, I understand why that guy's giving up in the middle of the games, because like you're getting doubled all the time, no one's giving you any help, and what's the point?
Yeah, I mean it's a really awkward team that doesn't seem to be constructed very well and doesn't seem to be coached very well. Come down to it, and I'll be stunned.
Lincoln.
Yeah, and I'll be stunned if he's the coach there too much longer. But so I just don't know. I mean, it's not that Indiana couldn't beat Michigan, because certainly they can. Jackson Davis is a really, really good player. He's probably an NBA player. If the other guys shoot it, then you're in trouble. But most of the season, they really haven't shot it, and they really seem like a disorganized mess to me. So. Hopefully this is the one game where you'd have where you really don't have a lot of prep time, that maybe it won't make that much difference.
Watching them against Rutgers really kind of highlighted what I don't like about Indiana this year. Because Rutgers, I mean, they are who they are. They know exactly who they are, right? They're going to defend like crazy. They're going to try to steal the ball all the time. They're going to, run off ball screens. And shoot their long twos, right? Rutgers, they've accepted who they are, and they are Rutgers. And they're fun to watch a little bit, because like they know what they're doing. And Indiana just does not have any identity whatsoever. And watching the two of them play against each other, it was so clear that Rutgers was very comfortable in their skin. And Indiana is just like, okay, what are we right now? What are we right now? All right, let's change the bench out. And now we're a different team.
Yeah, I really think that's a really good point, Seth. And I think you're right. You watch Rutgers, and to some extent, they're just this ragtag group. But on the other hand, they're really comfortable with it, and they're really good at it, and they play hard, and they're going to smack you in the head, and they're going to win a lot of games. Indiana, I don't know what they are. I watch them, and I have no idea what they are, what they're trying to do. So
you guys haven't helped change my opinion that Indiana's an enigma, and yet somehow they're like a couple of wins away from potentially being a bubble team and getting in, which is remarkable in itself. Five games left in the regular season, guys. Which of these five games, I'll go two of them to the same opponent, which do you think is the toughest out? Which is the toughest of the five remaining games on the schedule?
Iowa. Yeah, like just they can shoot anybody out of the building. And Illinois has been so up and down. Like they went to overtime with Indiana. They went to overtime with Nebraska. They just lost to Michigan State. Like Kofi Coburn has a huge weakness where you can just like throw three guys at him and he's going to put the ball up anyway. His assist rate this year is 1.0. That is not good. That is bad. Especially for a guy who gets doubled as much as he does. So you can limit him and really keep the Illinois offense off balance, because they are so dependent on Io. And you can say that Iowa is as dependent on Luka Garza, but the difference there is like, Luka Garza isn't dribbling into a bunch of bad shots and being a superhero to knock those down, which Io has been. Like he has had a legitimate case to be the best player in the league, but that's because the degree of difficulty on his shots is so much higher. So if he kind of comes back to earth a little bit and you're able to like double Coburn out of the game a little bit, then they're going to struggle. And that's how they've just kind of fallen apart in certain games here and there. So it's I feel that they're much more inconsistent than Iowa's been, because Iowa, CJ Frederick missed most of about six games, and that was where they were losing all their games. So when they have Frederick, they're a different team. They should have Frederick for Michigan, and that leaves a very up and down Illinois team that seems like clear second place.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think Illinois has holes and weaknesses and problems. You can limit IO by just forcing him left. Coburn, you know, gets frustrated when he's double teamed. He can't pass out of the double teams. He's had, I mean, as a 1.0 assist rate, he has three assists all year. Three assists on the year for a guy who's been double teamed. So he just cannot pass the ball out of the post. And so they have, I mean, yeah, they're talented. There's no doubt about that. Coburn's an NBA guy, and so is DeSumo, but they have holes that I don't see in the Iowa team, particularly on offense. I'm a little worried about Michigan State, to be honest, because because they seem to have decided we're playing four guys, and then our fifth guy is a center, and it's just going to be, we're just going to go in and use 20 fouls. And they did the other night against, I can't recall who they were playing, but
Coburn.
Yeah. Used them all against Coburn. So, and then we're just going to go in and hold him and shove him. And then we'll just play our four guys who can actually play basketball. And it worked, and it's worked for the last couple games for them. So I think they are finding a sort of identity there, something that they haven't had all year, and they're not going to be easy, because I still think Langford's a good player and Aaron Henry's a good player. And the kid at the point isn't really a point, but you know, he's better than what they were using, Rocket Watts and Gabe can shoot it, the other guy. So I right now I'm thinking they're a much better team, and they're not out of the NCAAs yet, not by any stretch.
Well, Foster Lawyer got hurt, and I think that they're a much better team not using that.
Well, maybe that's why Izzo finally made the right move. You know, because he was just a massive defensive liability aside from anything else, and so right now they're a better team than they have been.
And they're not an NCAA tournament team yet, but they have four games left in their regular season, and all four of them could put them back on the mat.
That's correct.
More than one win, but they have a chance. So we'll see how it goes. All right, a lot of basketball, obviously. Next week we'll be talking about, well, they play Illinois between now and then too as well. So we'll be recapping three basketball games with you guys next week. It's a lot of action going on, needless to say, as the final weeks of the regular season are upon us. But also hockey, obviously still rolling along. Last week, Brian, a 1-1 week. Update on the hockey team for us?
Well, they score 8 goals in one game, and they score 2 in another game. And then it's just – so your opinion of the hockey team really depends on whether your opinion about, like, what that means. Like, if you think that means Michigan is inconsistent and young and they need to get better, then you have one feeling about the hockey team. If you look at this and you're just like, okay, we outscored them by 7 on the weekend, and that's the thing that means something and is more important going forward, then this team just looks like a very, very unfortunate hockey team that is concentrating all of its goals in one game a weekend, especially because, you know, that Friday loss, Eric Portillo gave up probably 2 of the worst goals I've seen this year, certainly, and possibly going back a few years. So that's a difficult loss to take, because, you know, you have a guy out of his net who gives up the puck and they get a quick wraparound goal, and then you just have this harmless puck flutter into the net, and then you lose 3-2, and you're like, well, what are you going to do? Because they outshot Ohio State the way they needed to outshoot Ohio State. So I feel like this is a very good hockey team, that their record does not reflect the quality of their play, particularly after the break.
Well, you said that last week, and you were right on the money. And I did something that Bill James does in baseball. I ran a Pythagorean theorem of goals scored and goals against. And doing that, you can predict how many teams – how many games a team should win. And I did it with Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And with Minnesota, you would predict they should have won 19 and a half games so far this year. They've won 19. With Wisconsin, it predicts Wisconsin should have won 15 games this year, and they've won exactly 15. And with Michigan, it predicts that they should have won 15.3 games, and they've won 12. And so this sort of lack of I don't know what you would call it, homogeneity and scoring goals, if that's right, has really been a problem. And it's just, I think you can think, oh, good teams win close games, which I think is not true. Or you can think that they've just been bit by randomness, which I think is true. And so they've just been unlucky, and I think it may work out yet for this team.
I mean, Portillo plays the puck behind the net all the time. You knew he was going to do it once. It's just unfortunate that it happens in the 3-2 game, not in the 8-1 game, right?
Yeah.
Like the one that's still
6-0 technically. We should get the score right of the second.
6-0 was right.
Right. You know, 8-1 was what I predicted it would be after we lost 3-2. But like the Michigan State game, like any Michigan hockey fan can pick out, you know, the three moments that make the difference between a 15-win team and a 12-win team right now. I'm just really impressed that any of you guys have been able to watch these games, because BTN Plus is so bad.
Oh, yeah.
And it was worse than it's ever been this weekend. They had like, I think the Ohio State radio guys were doing it. And I mean, they from the very beginning, they're like, "And the ugliest helmet ever conceived by man."
Well,
that's
also,
their shtick. That's their shtick. They say that every game.
I didn't even turn it on, because to hear them, I had to turn my television's volume all the way to maximum. Yes. And then, like, you know, the Limp Bizkit fans who pick out the music at Ohio State events, they were twice as loud as the announcers. So I wasn't going to listen to like chocolate starfish during a hockey game, so I just turned them off. But then you've got like no replays, you've got the camera that's from a blimp above the stadium.
Yeah, they keep going to center ice every time they score. Like, I'd like to see like how that puck went in.
Yeah, it's
actually have the capability of showing a replay of a goal. I've seen it at Yost. I'm sure that's the technology is there, obviously. That was my frustration watching women's games earlier in the year, was the lack of replay part, because you really want to see something again, and we're so used to it. We're obviously very spoiled.
There wasn't even a clock on the screen this time.
Wow. Yeah, that's true.
The amount of times a score is wrong, the clock's usually right, but the amount of times that women's games the score was wrong, thankfully Matt Park's doing the games when this Michigan home game, and he's constantly calling out the score, and that corrects that part of it. But yeah, BTN Plus could use some help with their technology, and they have the worst HD cameras too. And that's not just BTN Plus, that's just BTN. They have the worst HD cameras, I think, in the business.
Well, my wife said she's not going to watch the games this weekend, that she's just going to listen to Alex call it on WCBN, which is the student station, and I think Alex does some work. Alex Drain does.
I highly recommend doing so. That's what I switched to.
However, would say listen to Al Randall here on.
Okay. Sorry, Ira.
But I also say I had a lot of fun over my years. Now this is 20 plus years ago. I love doing games at WCBN. I had a ton of fun. Those kids do a great job. But the official call of the Michigan Network is here on tomorrow and Saturday on Sports Talk 50 WTK to take it on a. It's kind of a.
Sorry, man.
Is it a throwaway weekend? I know you want to win the games, but playing Arizona State at this stage is a kind of a. I thought they were going to play everybody once. They're playing them twice. That's kind of a throwaway, though.
It's not a throwaway because there's no pairwise this year. So,
I mean, you just have to win.
You got to win these games, but like they're just going to be picking names out of a hat. So, getting a sweep this weekend, following up what you did to Arizona State the first time around. It's important
because just pile the wins.
Yeah, I mean, just if you just look at quality of play, Michigan should be in the tournament. But like right now, you know, they're probably a 3 or maybe even a 4 seed, and they need to translate some of this goal scoring into sweeps. And this weekend would be a good place to start.
Yeah, I've been going to the games at Chrysler. Thank you, Christy McNeil. She's been giving me a press pass, and David Pasternak and I have been going, so I haven't had to endure too much of BTN Plus, but it's painful to watch those productions.
All right, guys, and so next week we're going to come back. Hopefully, we're talking about a couple of hockey wins, and then obviously the home stretch of the hockey season. And Brian, you can really give us an update after this week and what that's going to look like, because as you said, winning games is important, winning series is important. Basketball, we'll have 3 games to talk about when you guys join us next week. Looking forward to that. We'll have one more chance to promote the big John U. Bacon roast coming up as well. It's been put out on Twitter by Seth. We've retweeted it as well, so looking forward to that. And then, of course, maybe next week we'll start to have the first things sort of coming out of. I mean, they call it spring practice. I don't know how you can call practice in February spring practice, but regardless, you're not going to get anything out of the first couple of days of practice, but maybe after a week of practice, we'll get some news and get some little bit of information. So we'll probably talk a little football with you guys again next week as well. So appreciate that, guys. Always fun catching with the fellows from the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider. And we're efforting a fix on Sam's technology because Sam's technology failed him and his internet went down in the middle of that last hour. So we unfortunate about that as well. But I want to thank the guys once again for joining us here on the show. We're going to end the Michigan Insider today. We'll get back tomorrow with the Friday edition. A lot to get to on the show tomorrow, including John U. Bacon and a whole lot more here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.